Dave Lieber is we've had many great people come and speak to SPJ workshops like this, but I'm not sure we've ever had the founder of a nation. Dave Lieber, who I will refer to fondly from here on out as Lieber. Lieber is he's the founder of the Watchdog Nation. That's what he calls his consumer rights movement that he started 20 years ago, I think.
2008
at the Star Telegram, almost. Then now continues it at the Dallas Morning News. He helps show Americans how to fight back against corruption in business and government. He's an author. And I believe he's also has some charitable endeavors that he's engaged in. Mm-hmm. A man of many talents. Dr. Ann Sutherland, in blue, has been working for, I have a list in order, so I'm going out of order of what you guys are, sorry. She has been working for the rights she was working for the rights of poor people to get medical care at John Peter Smith before she was ever elected to the Fort Worth School Board. She taught for 25 years, but as she said, she realized she had to get out of the classroom in order to help make the classroom better. In the process, became a budget analyst and a fighter for open government on the school board, and has fought many battles in that arena. Mary Kelleher, between her and Dave. You could kind of substitute, Tarrant Regional Water District Board for school board, and Mary has been fighting much of the same battle for open records there that Ann has on the school board. And in the same way, she became interested in water rights and water issues because they were surrounding her literally. She was getting flooded out in her property, and she started looking into why this was happening and why the agencies couldn't fix that, and she realized she had to get out of just that, her own situation, in order to find out more of the answers of what was going on and to try to get flooding and other water-related issues taken care of. She was trained as a school psychologist, and she's been a court intake supervisor for Tarrant County for many years. Tom Williams, he may have done more for Journalism Texas than any other two non-journalists. And if you put Paul Butler in there, then like four times, the other, one of our other major first amendment attorneys here in North Texas. He's the vice president of the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas, which is an excellent organization. It does many things, including sponsoring something near and dear to my heart, which has been the Light of Day project, so they help sponsor, which takes student journalists and helps teach them about public records and about asking for public records and writing about them, and a lot of great projects have come out of that. He's defended journalists and journalist organizations on libel, access to information, on freedom of the press, and many other issues, and he is a longtime member of our SPJ board. So, if it's okay, Dave, do you want to start and just come down the road?
Sure.
And y'all take it from here. Now, does anybody need a mic? Y'all feel the need for a mic? I have a mic.
Okay.
Let me just see where I can get it to you.
Okay.
And I'm going to put the wires over in front.
Okay. Look
that way. Oh, I didn't quite make it. There we go. Okay.
Well, just in the last day, I've been had a little battle with some government over open records. City of Dallas put in an open records request May 24th for some basic information, and told them I needed it within 2 days to make my deadline for my Sunday column. I never heard from them, and I let a month go by because I let them dig their own grave. And then they sent me the letter that they claimed they sent me a week later, but I never got it. And they gave me the wrong information. They said, we don't have it, and they sent me to a school district. But I went to City Hall, and someone in City Hall gave me the information. So when I called them out on it, they apologized. What good does an apology do, you know? I don't get to interview people anymore. I've been a journalist for 40 years, writing for daily newspapers for 40 years, and I don't get to interview people anymore because They tell me to put my questions in writing. And you know what? I don't really mind that, because as a journalist, if I don't get to interview you, I got more space to write what I want to write and less space for you. It's stupid to not let you interview. It's stupid to just hide behind written questions and answers. But what we've seen in America in the past 10 years, 15 years, is what I call the Madison Avenueization of government, where public relations techniques that are incredibly sophisticated, that worked on Madison Avenue for many, many years, have now infiltrated down to local governments and school districts. And also another trend that we've seen just in the past few years is that government officials don't need journalists to get their story out, because they have the media platforms that they, the online stuff, the newsletters and everything to reach their people. I was talking to the superintendent of the Carroll School District a couple of days ago in Southlake, and they told me that they used to have 8 reporters covering their school board meetings, and now they have 0. And they have a Twitter account that pushes their information out very successfully, and they have websites and everything, and they don't really miss us at all, because without us covering meetings, the elections are unopposed, the public doesn't know what issues there are, and it's just, the world has changed so drastically just in the past 10 years because of these trends. A survey came out last week that said something like 50,000 journalists have lost their jobs in the past 10 years in radio, TV, newspapers, and magazines, and you can just see it. In Washington, the reporters all speak with one voice. Mike Allen, who writes the Political Playbook newsletter in the morning, he drives the agenda. I'm right now reading the book This Town by Mark Leibovich from the New York Times about Washington culture. And it's pretty sickening because the diversity in American opinion is pretty much gone. Even though the country's polarized, there's basically only one or two ways to think anymore. So that's my introduction on what I see, and I'll just pass this on to you.
This is my first time ever being on a panel, so I'm going to give it my best shot here. I was elected to the Tarrant Regional Water District as a member of the board in May of last year. Right away, I was elected by over 9,000, well, just about 9,000 people. By the way, that's the most ever in the Tarrant Regional Water District race. And just for your information, I have no political background at all. I'm one of the ones that drive people like y'all crazy because I don't vote. I think that it's the person with the most money that's going to win anyway, so I don't bother. When water issues started affecting my life personally, that's when I started getting active. And by the grace of God, I got onto the Tarrant Regional Water District, and I realized that a lot of people, I think, get into politics for the right reasons, and then once they're there, they forget why they're there. I've made three open record requests. My first one I made was non-responsive and incomplete. I asked for emails for a month's period of time from the general manager of the water district, Jim Oliver, to a couple of other high-level people. And I think for a period of month, I received 8 emails. So anyone that sends emails, I mean, we all know we send more than 8 in a month. That was my first one. I asked for lobbyist information, and I received about 4 pages. Since then, the journalists and the media have requested some records, and I have to give the media credit. They've been an incredible ally to me in all this. They've taught me that I need to tell them what, they haven't let me put my foot in my mouth, basically. They've been really, really good to me. They've obtained more lobbyist information. See, I didn't know what I was getting into. And boy, I stepped right now, big old pile of fire ants, but it's starting to be challenging, and it's starting to be fun, and the records, I know they're there, and I know eventually someone's got to come to our aid and get them. In my case, the TRWD actually hired an expert attorney in the field of ethics to help public record requests get processed at our agency at the Tarrant Regional Water District. His first job, though, was to handle mine. So I sent in a very specific request asking for mostly ledgers so I could, I have to make financial decisions on a regular basis, and I wanted to see the ledger so I could make a knowledgeable decision. I was told that I wasn't clear enough in what I was requesting. So I just, the records request just kind of lapsed. Now Lance Gooden, out of East Texas, a representative, he's made the same request I have, and as through, for legislative purposes, he's asked for the same records I've asked for, and they won't even give them to him. His deadline filed, guess what they said? They needed more clarification. I don't know, if you could see my request, it's so specific, it doesn't require any clarification, at least not in my opinion. And he's been shut down too. There were two other state reps that requested the same, put in letters saying you need to give her her information. Still don't have it. Now, I did submit my third record request just last week or the week before, so my deadline's coming up on the 26th, so we'll see if I get any. I'm not going to hold my breath because I don't think I'm even going to get it, which to me just absolutely amazes me, because as an elected official in charge of the oversight of that funding, I cannot see how they can get away with not giving me or others the information that we need to make sure that they're running the agency correctly. I don't know why someone doesn't come in and make them do it. It just kind of blows my mind. So it's a wait and see, and I don't know what Representative Gooden is going to do about him not getting his records. But it's only been a year, so I still have 3 more years to go to get some records. So we'll just kind of see. I'm passing this on to Dr. Sutherland.
I should tell you why I've asked to go by Dr. Sutherland. I got my doctorate when I was 35, which was 40 years ago. And I've never been Dr. Sutherland. And when I was elected to the school board, the president was a banker named Ray Dickerson. And the CFO was still there. His name's Hank Johnson. One day, Hank Johnson referred to his staff of MBAs as the girls. And a little bit later, Ray Dickerson referred to our executive secretary as the girls. And throughout, he called our two male doctorates, one of whom is an honorary doctorate, he referred to them as doctor and me as Mrs. As it happens, Sutherland is the name I was born with, so it's technically Miss Sutherland if you want to be that way. And finally, I couldn't help it. I lost my temper. I said, I would like you to refer to me as Dr. Sutherland. And so to this day, I'm Dr. Sutherland, which is neither here nor there. but the fact that we have no control over our institutions is a very serious fact indeed. I'll just tell you a couple of small things about the school district, because it's getting worse. I've taken to doing PowerPoints because when I speak to them, they don't listen, so I've put together PowerPoints, which I learned how to do in one of my other lives. And basically, 3 years ago, they increased the class size throughout the district by approximately 2 kids, thus saving an estimated $25 million. That's $25 million that came out of the classroom and went somewhere else. Got the picture? That's a lot of money. Our budget's $600 million. And so What's happened is our reserves have been building up and building up and building up and building up. We have $182 million in reserves, which is about $100 million more than we need. And so instead of I complained about this. This is one of my PowerPoints. I complained about this, and I said this budget that we're going to vote on next Tuesday, we need to put these people back in the classroom. That should be our top priority. I presented evidence, nationally recognized evidence, that class size has an impact, and also nationally recognized evidence that our students have gone from next to the top to next to the bottom among urban Texas districts. It's very disturbing. It's been going on for 7 years. No one has done anything about it. There has been no investigation of why, except for what I've done on my own time. Anyway, they decided, no, we're going to add, they first proposed to add $46 million to a project developed by the central office. They then whittled that down to $21 million, but not one more penny is going to reduce class size. And so this is about as serious as it gets, because that's what schools are about. I forgot my manners when I came. I really mean this. I was honored to be asked to speak at this organization, and because I know how important you are. If it weren't for the Fort Worth Weekly and the Star-Telegram, I wouldn't be where I am, because they publicized the things that I dug up, not only for JPS, but also for the school district. And I was really gratified. I indulged myself 5 nights a week by watching Rachel Maddow. And Rachel Maddow had a piece on it 1 week about how if it weren't for the local journalists, our country would be in a bigger mess than it is. And you are indeed the front lines. And people like Mary and I may dig things up, but it's the journalists who make them valuable. And I cannot thank you enough. After Betty Brink passed away, I was really glad that you gave her the award of Investigative Journalist of the Year. I happen to know how much it meant to her, because she and I met monthly during the period where she was still healthy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and likewise, thank you for having me here this morning. I guess just a couple of sort of opening comments that I have. To me, the biggest issue we've seen with respect to the Public Information Act in Texas in the last probably 10 years now, perhaps even 15, has been dealing with changes in technology. The statute was passed by the legislature in 1973, and of course it was then called the Open Records Act. And that was a time, of course, when records were maintained exclusively on paper, and open records requests were made by paper, and it was just a different time. And as is always the case, the law is always a step or two behind the technology. We didn't have laws dealing with automobile traffic until we first had automobiles. And in the horse and buggy day, you had no liability if your buggy ran into somebody else, because the law knew that sometimes the horse did what the horse wanted to do and not what the driver wanted it, the horse to do. And so, believe it or not, in the very early, early days of the existence of the automobile, that attitude carried over until finally society figured out that the driver might have responsibility for what the automobile does. And it's the same in any area. So this is no different than any other. I think the legislature has done a pretty good job of trying to stay current. But as fast as we are seeing the advances in technology today, it's always going to be a little bit behind, especially when you have a legislature that only meets every other year and has a lot of other things on its mind besides amending the Public Information Act. When I first started practicing law and started handling cases in this area, quite often the issue was whether something was or was not public information. And we still see some of that. That hasn't gone away, but much more frequently, I think the difficult cases are not about whether something is or is not public information, but at what cost and in what format must it be provided? And we that can be potentially very complicated. It's very fact specific to a particular request, and it's just a constant issue. The first full 12-month year that we had an Open Records Act, as it was then called, there were maybe about 80 or 90 Attorney General rulings, Attorney General Open Records rulings. Now, of course, as I'm sure any of you who have ever made a public information request or responded to one know, the Attorney General now decides almost every single case on the basis of what the office calls an open records letter ruling, as opposed to the formal open records decision. The distinction has really become meaningless in the last few years. But I looked at the AG's website this morning just to be sure I had the exact numbers. In 2013, the Attorney General's office issued 22,421 open records letter rulings. In 2014, we're already up to 10,608. Now, it strikes me as not a good situation when there have already this year been 10,608 times that someone made a Public Information Act request that the recipient submitted to the Attorney General's office. And whether that's an explosion in requests, whether it's an explosion in governmental bodies sending requests to the Attorney General, whether it is a combination of the two, whether it is something else, I don't know. But it strikes me that that's noteworthy. I would suggest the system should work in the perfect world where we don't have 10,000 times every 6 months, where it is, at least in the view of someone, unclear enough that we have to go to the Attorney General's office. I don't know that I have a solution. In fact, I know that I don't have a solution. As far as just being a predictor of the future, I don't know that I have any reason to predict this is going to change anytime soon. But I do think it's an issue. It's an issue we should be aware of. There will be some issues in the 2015 session of the legislature revolving around the technology issue. I think one of the biggest issues that the legislature will continue to deal with relates to information dealing with governmental business that is maintained on a privately owned computer or handheld device. There was a bill passed in 2013 that speaks to that, but I suspect we may see some more tweaking on that. So be looking for that. And also, although this deals more with the Open Meetings Act than with the Public Information Act, I think we will still see legislation dealing with communication among elected officials by electronic means, and to what extent does hitting the reply to all button potentially violate the Open Meetings Act.
You guys are so succinct. Questions? Yes.
Husband being a CPA auditor, me pestering the Tarrant Regional Water District, poor record keeping, no executive director to provide immediate, ready access to the records. The words poor record keeping are dangerous words to an auditor. And if you get that to the Texas auditor, it may mean something. I haven't gotten far enough to know what it means, but I know that if you say ready access to records, those are common language. If you say poor record keeping, that is dangerous language. And I'm going after the financial stuff to learn the vocabulary, the nonprofit organizations of the Trinity River Vision, corporations, incorporations, nonprofit block. I'm not there yet. But I do know the words poor record keeping will fit under open records and open meetings and do something. Now that's one. My question is, we do not know how to cause open records to be given to us. I spoke to a constable. He had a recipe, but his was paper. You're saying technology. Technology is difficult to produce if you do not have the same version as they do, and they cannot download to you. So how do we learn enough sophistication to cause open records to be given to us that are digital? Well, I don't speak digital, ones and O's. How do we do that? Do we go through a Texas auditor? Do we cause public opinion? What do we do?
It's their job to give you the information. They don't have to, you're not required to go buy a, you know, a device that matches their device. They have to give you the records.
They won't.
Oh, okay. By law, they're supposed to give you the records no matter what device you ask for. But do you want to, build that one?
Most everything is available on Excel. And sometimes it's
spreadsheet.
And when it's not, fortunately, at my newspaper, The Morning News, we have these data experts who, you know, can take the data from one form and convert it into the new form. I know the average person doesn't have that kind of expertise. However, if I were a citizen, not a journalist, and I was trying to get records, and they were given to me in some kind of form that I couldn't use on my home computer to analyze, what I would be to find a friend who is a computer geek. And I'd ask them to work that stuff into language that I can understand. Also, another way to do it is to actually ask for the paper printouts of it. And, you know, that's going to be in a form that you can understand. And most everything can be printed out. Now, whether we want 1,000 pages or not, that's fine.
It makes it much more expensive.
Do what?
That's more expensive.
Can you ask in smaller segments?
Yeah, sure. You can ask for anything, you know. I want to just say one thing that we haven't touched on that probably should, which is the preamble for the Texas Public Information Act, which is my favorite piece of language in Texas law. And it says essentially, the records do not belong to the government. The government is the custodian of the records. They are the keeper of the records. The records belong to the people. And there are only, what, Tom, 4, 5, 6, 7 exemptions for public records, right? How many?
Well, unfortunately, there's quite